This meeting of the House Transportation Committee can come to order. It is now 1:02 on Thursday, January 23rd, 2025, and we are in Capitol Room 124. Our members present today include Representative Moore, Representative Mina, and Representative Stutes, Co-Chair Representative Eichheit, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Carrick. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business, and please take this time to silence your cell phones through the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I just want to take a minute to thank the staff for our House Transportation Committee, including Suniva St. Clair and Andrew Magnuson from House Records, as well as Susan Quigley and Shelby Carroll from the Juneau LIO, for staffing our committee. My committee aide is my staffer, Griffin Sakeyu, and I also want to recognize my co-chair's committee aide, Meredith Trainer. Thank you for all of your help. On today's agenda, we do have two presenters, but just before we get to that, as this is our first convening of the House Transportation Committee for the 34th Legislature, I wanted to offer an opportunity for our members to briefly introduce themselves on the record and state any introductory remarks briefly that you would like. I'll also just recognize that my committee aide has sent out information regarding committee scheduling and will continue to be a point of contact for all of our members. Please get in touch with us at any time if there are questions or ideas for our committee or concerns that you would like to see addressed, and we'll do our best to bring those up in our hearings. So with that, I'm going to turn to my co-chair to do a brief introduction first and then go around the room.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Ted Eichheit, and I represent House District 22 in Northeast Anchorage. And just a couple of fun facts about me. After spending a career as a teacher, I was a long-range planner for the Massachusetts Borough for 6 years. And even though I didn't work directly on transportation, I rub shoulders with our transportation planner on a regular basis. And the number three top issue in House District 22 when I did doors was the roads. So I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Alexi Moore. I represent District 28. This is my first committee meeting ever, so excited to kick it off. That was probably the number one issue at our doors as well in 28 was transportation, roads, and rail system. So excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. My name is Genevieve Mina. I'm proud to continue representing House District 19, which is the Anchorage neighborhoods of Airport Heights, Mountain View, and Russian Jack. We're at the mouth of the Glen Highway once you get to Anchorage, and so my district is really a nexus of a lot of different transportation issues. We have the highest percentage of pedestrians in Anchorage, particularly people who don't have access to a car. We also have a lot of bikers and cyclists. A lot of my district is right next to a small airport, so excited to continue serving on this committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Louise Stutes from Kodiak, and I also represent several coastal communities, Cordova, Seward, and as you might guess, the Marine Highway is one of our focus points because it's what keeps our community sustainable and viable. And so I'm happy once again to be a member of your committee, Madam Chair, and I look forward to an exciting couple of years. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, everybody, for the introductions. And just for myself, I represent West Fairbanks, and that includes the University of Alaska, and we've talked a little bit about roads being so important on the campaign trail, and here in this building, such an important topic of conversation, as well as the Marine Highway. And I'll just throw in there that for myself in the interior, our rural airports are huge for all of our communities in rural Alaska, and our railroad is also extremely important for our communities. And I hope that we can address all of the varying modes of transportation as we go through the next couple of years and our sessions. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started today. On today's agenda, we do have two presenters, Jackson Fox and Aaron Yonganellen. Mr. Fox is the Executive Director of Fairbanks Area Surface Transportation, known as FAST Planning, and has been Executive Director of FAST Planning since 2019. Mr. Jan Ganellen is the Transportation Planning Manager and Municipal Planning Organization Coordinator for the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation, or AMATS. So at this time, I'd like us to turn our attention to Mr. Fox, who is joining us via Teams from Fairbanks. Thank you for being with us this afternoon, Mr. Fox, and please proceed with your presentation. While we're getting him queued up, I'll also note for the members of the committee, we will be able to take questions during his presentation today, and please remember to direct questions through the chair, if possible. And then after that presentation wraps up, we will have a second presentation. So if it runs past the 2 o'clock hour, we might have to kind of work through the rest of the presentation and move on. We'll take a brief at ease. All right. We're back on the record with House Transportation, and it sounds like our audio is working now. Sorry for the technological delay there. We'll turn it over to Mr. Fox for the FAST Planning presentation.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair Carrick. As I was stating, you couldn't hear me. Just wanted to give you all a little bit of background on myself. I did grow up in Anchorage, down in South Anchorage, and moved up to Fairbanks in 1999 for college at UAF, and I'm a graduate of UAF. I spent a couple years working in engineering consulting up here, and then moved over to the city of Fairbanks' engineering department, where I worked for 11 years. And I have been director of the Metropolitan Planning Organization, now known as FAST Planning, for the past 7 years. Griffin, can you go to the next slide, please? So today I'm going to give you a short presentation. Representative Carrick's office did reach out to me to make this presentation here today, really with two objectives in mind. I've been asked to present what happened with the STIP from the MPO's perspective, and what's the outlook for this coming year in 2025. And just want to note a few disclaimers. I'm not a state of Alaska employee, and I did not work on the STIP. So the information I'm presenting is in my work and my observations from working with DOT staff on a daily basis. Official written correspondence that's been passed back and forth as the STIP has been developed through the current STIP and the latest amendment, and discussion and dialogue in meetings. Our MPOs do quarterly meetings with DOT and our federal partners throughout the year, and the STIP, of course, is a hot topic in those meetings. However, we do manage our own TIP, which, if you compare the STIP to the STIP, we have about 30 projects in our boundary here that we manage ourselves, and then within the STIP, there's just over 300 projects, and our TIP is part of the STIP. So we do have to go through the same process and steps and development of our TIP that are required for the STIP. And then lastly, we are an independent 501c3 nonprofit organization. So we are an independent organization of the state.
And Mr. Fox, okay. we have a question.
Yes.
From Rep. Stutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just maybe for those listening, could you tell us what an MPO is?
Yes, I can. And that's my very next slide. Okay, so an MPO, that acronym stands for Metropolitan Planning Organization. These types of organizations are federally mandated to exist for every urbanized area in the U.S. And an urbanized area is a densely settled population of 50,000 or more people. In Alaska, we have three MPOs, one in Anchorage, one in Fairbanks, and a brand new one down in the Mat-Su region. We're not only federally mandated to exist, but we're also, this also comes with federal funding to operate our office and sub-allocation of federal funds to do local road improvements within our area. But our primary mission in the federal regulations is to carry out the transportation planning process to develop the long and short range transportation plans for our region. And as part of that process, we all have what we call policy boards, which invites our locally elected officials to the table to engage in that decision-making process for how our federal funds are spent within our boundary. So on our board, we have all three local mayors, City of Fairbanks Mayor, City of North Pole Mayor, and the Borough Mayor, as well as a seat for a Borough Assembly member, a City Council member, and then two seats for the state. And throughout our transportation planning process, we continually engage with the public as we are planning out our transportation improvements and dedicating funding to those projects. Next slide shows you the area in which we serve. As I mentioned before, we engage with the two cities. As you can see within our boundary, we have the full city limits of Fairbanks and North Pole, as well as the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus. And then in the middle of our boundary, we have Fort Wainwright. Provided they're a Department of Defense facility, we don't do any planning work for them. They do their own through the with funding through the Department of Defense. But this just kind of shows you the geographic area. It's a very small subset of the entire borough. It really is just that urban core, and our boundary is based on the results of the U.S. Census for our 50,000-plus population. So within this area, there's about 70,000 people that we serve. Okay, next slide. So that's an introduction to the Fairbanks MPO fast planning and why I'm here today. And now I'm going to switch gears over to the STIP. You should all be familiar with what the STIP is, but I just wanted to outline a slide here. It stands for the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. And in my opinion, it is the most important document that DOT produces because this is a short-range funding plan that reflects the funding decisions and how the Alaska's federal highway funding apportionments will be spent throughout the state, which is the tune of just over $700 million per year that's apportioned to the state. And where that money comes from is our gas and diesel taxes paid at the pump in Alaska, plus some general fund revenues out of DC that come back to the state of Alaska for investment into our transportation infrastructure. Okay, next slide. The STIP is a four-year funding plan, just like our TIP. Our local plan is also a four-year funding plan. And so I'm going to kind of go through the chronology of events here with the past STIP, the current STIP, and Amendment 1, and looking forward to Amendment 2 to be released later this month. But the last STIP, which was federal fiscal years 2020 through 2023, was set to expire on September 30th, 2023. This was the fourth year of that STIP. Planning for this deadline, work on developing a new STIP to replace that for 2024 through 2027 really should begin about a year and a half prior to that expiration date, so around mid-2022. As we know, in working in this business, it can take up to a year to develop a brand new STIP, and this, of course, requires consulting with stakeholders statewide, not just our MPOs, but also tribal entities and local governments throughout the state. To try to identify and evaluate and prioritize project needs to apply that $700 million-plus year to those project needs and projects throughout the state. In development of the STIP, it does require a 45-day public comment period, so that needs to be factored into your schedule. And at the conclusion of that comment period, there's the responsibility to resolve those comments, provide responses to each one, and make corresponding revisions to the STIP document. And then later it gets submitted to our federal partners, which is the Federal Highway Administration and Federal Transit Administration, for their review and compliance with the regulations and resolve their comments and finalize the STIP. And really what you want to do as you develop a STIP is have this process that I just outlined completed at least 6 months in advance of your deadline or expiration of your current STIP. Because, you know, unforeseen issues can come up that additional work may be required to revise the STIP. And potentially, if some of these revisions are significant enough, you may want to re-release the STIP for a second public comment period if there's substantial changes the public has not yet had a chance to review. And then lastly here, development of the STIP historically. I've been working in transportation planning for about 20 years now, and throughout that time it's been historically managed by DOT planning and program development staff within the department. Okay, next slide.
Mr. Fox?
Yes.
I have a question on this last slide on the STIP four-year funding plan. So you said that amendment number 2 was set to be released within the month. I guess a first question is it fairly typical in the STIP process to have amendments proposed and have to go through multiple rounds of amendments from your past experience?
Yes, it is. Throughout the life of that four-year plan, it's very common, you know, to have, say, a half dozen amendments during the life of that plan. There's also a thing called an administrative modification, which is something that does not need to be released for public comment because it's just minor changes to projects in the STIP. And there's typically a dozen or more administrative modifications that are made in addition to that half dozen or so amendments, which are more major changes to the STIP during the life of this 4 years.
And then just as a follow-up, the first amendment, was it released in the timeline that it was stated to be released, or was it released at a later date than was expected? And the reason I ask that is if the second amendment round is set to be released within the month, is it your perspective that we will actually see that within the month?
I do have the chronology of events here from the STIP to the amendment with dates. Just kind of backtracking them, the STIP was partially approved, the main STIP, in March of 2024. And then the first amendment was released in July after that. And I'm not necessarily concerned with the timeline of the release 3 months after the first STIP. But yes, with the amendment number 2 coming out later this month, we were informed it would be released on January 7th, and that date has come and passed. We heard that it'll be later here in January, but we also know that our federal partners wanted a preliminary review draft of that prior to its release for public comment, and they wanted 2 weeks to take a look at it. And I believe that has been provided to our federal partners, but I believe that that would push the release date out to February. Or amendment number 2.
Thank you. Please continue.
Okay, next slide. So based on my previous slide, development of the new STIP for 2024 through 2027, in my opinion, began on schedule and was being developed by DOT Program Development and Planning Division staff. However, despite work being carried out on it in 2022 and early 2023, by springtime, I had not seen the document released yet for public comment. And this made me a little bit nervous because the STIP was set to expire in September. And, you know, based on my opinion to plan out the schedule for release of a STIP, it should have been done at latest March. And why that makes me nervous is that, again, as I stated on a previous slide, there our TIP is part of the STIP. So if the STIP expires and misses that deadline, that means our TIP is also not valid at that time. So it would cancel not only the MPO's funding plans, but also the state's funding plan. So I was getting concerned around the March timeframe when I hadn't seen that be released yet, even though I was hearing from DOT staff it would be released by March. Around this time, the commissioner's office took over development of the STIP, and I put this in with an asterisk here on the slide because this is where things get a little bit messy in the chronology of events and some of the outcomes of development of the STIP and subsequent amendments. And I'm going to cover some of those concerns in the slides following this. But at that time, you know, I didn't know the status, the completeness of the STIP. Historically, preliminary drafts have not been shared with us, so I don't know if it was near complete or only half complete, nor do I know the reason why management of the STIP was moved from program development and planning staff over to the commissioner's office. But the STIP was, in fact, released at the end of July. Again, this is in 2023. But based on that timeline, it makes it very challenging to get through that 45-day public comment period, resolve comments, and get through your federal reviews to get the new STIP approved prior to the expiration date of September 30th.
Mr. Fox, we have a question on this slide from Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Herrick. Through the chair, for Mr. Fox, just related to your TIP, what is your TIP timeline period? Because I'm trying to figure out how that crosses over with the STIP four-year period. And the second question is, do you also follow similar timelines for your TIP with the STIP that you stated in your previous slide? Thank you.
Yes, through the chair, yes, we do. Our local funding plan, our TIP, is a four-year plan. And it does sync well with the 2024 through 2027 STIP. We actually completed our new TIP by March of 2023. So we were done with our public review periods, our federal review, and the and adoption by our policy board by March, which is the time frame in which we thought the STIP might be released. Ideally, you would like to see our TIPs done before the STIP, because our TIPs are incorporated by reference into the STIP. So we try to get that done in advance of the new STIP being published, since it becomes part of the STIP once a new STIP is developed.
Thank you.
We also have a question from Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, in listening to you speak, I'm assuming, and maybe not correctly, that this is not your first TIP that you have participated in. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And it doesn't sound like there was maybe too much of a collaborative relationship between DOT and you this last STIP period. Yeah. Had there been previously to this one more of a collaborative relationship with DOT in forming the TIP and the STIP?
Yes. Previously, it was more collaborative, working with planning and program development staff on the STIP. I would say that over time, through different iterations of the STIP, we have been asking for preliminary drafts of the STIP before it's released and have not received those even from planning and program development staff. But the projects within our boundaries were well coordinated. And this last round, the projects were not well coordinated.
One follow-up, if I might, Madam Chair. Thank you. Appreciate it. Through the chair. Did you, when you were working with DOT, did you have the opportunity to work with anybody maybe that had been previously familiar with or worked on the DOT STIP?
Not through the commissioner's office, no, but there was still some involvement by planning and program development staff that I've worked with for many, many years.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then we also have a question from Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Fox. Mr. Fox, in your presentation, you say that the commissioner's office took over the development of the STIP. That's your asterisk point. And I guess my question is, do you know of any instance in a previous STIP development where such a move of the planning process has occurred, to your knowledge?
No, I've not observed this in my career before. Typically, the commissioner's office is approves the STIP at the end of the process, but is typically not involved in the development of that funding plan.
Follow-up, Ms. Chair.
Follow-up.
The follow-up would be is, so if you had not seen this in the past, how much buzz did that create within, say, your MPO? How much bandwidth or anxiety did that create?
It definitely created a higher level of anxiety with our technical committee and policy board, but also from my conversations with staff at DOT, it created some anxiety there. And through at around this time period, there was actually a bit of an exodus of some DOT staff to other employment opportunities. It was fairly disruptive to our normal workflow.
Thank you.
I think that's all the questions. Please continue.
Okay, next slide. On the previous slide there, I mentioned, you know, when the transition of management of the STIP was moved from DOT staff over to the commissioner's office, things got a little bit messy. And, you know, we first saw this when it was released for public comment, again, in late July of 2023. And so I've got three slides here just kind of bullet pointing some of our early concerns. These are generally comments that we made through our comment letters on the STIP at the time from both Anchorage and Fairbanks, as well as the federal partners that were reviewing the public review draft had shared with us some of their concerns. And of course, there was a lot of meetings occurring because we were identifying a number of deficiencies in the STIP. And personally, I was concerned that the STIP was headed down a road where it would not be approvable. So just kind of on this slide here, first and foremost, our concern was lack of coordination with the MPOs, but also all other local governments and tribal entities throughout the state. That coordination and consultation is required by regulation, and it wasn't carried out during development of the STIP. There was also lack of information on how the projects that were included in the STIP, how were they scored and selected and prioritized for inclusion in the STIP. We have a very robust process for our TIP where we objectively score and rank every transportation need that we have so that the best projects sail to the top to receive that funding. And so we didn't see any evidence or any information on how these projects were actually selected for the STIP. And then also one of our big concerns was is that there was new projects that were added to the STIP within our boundary that that were never planned nor included in our long and short range transportation plans. Any project within our boundary must be selected for funding by our policy board, but the STIP appeared to be selecting projects for us. And for Fairbanks, this included the bridge replacement projects for the Chena Flood Control Area and Steese Highway Milepost 5. Neither one of these bridge replacement projects were identified as a need in our local and short range transportation plans, but yet they made it into the STIP. And of course, those bridge replacements were very controversial because that's when last year is when the overhaul began to occur through our community. And that's just two projects for us. You'll receive a presentation later from Aaron with AMATS, and he'll share with you the projects that were put into the STIP that were within their boundary that needed to be removed. Next slide.
Mr. Fox, really briefly on this slide. Can you, I appreciate the characterization on the bridge replacement projects that were added to the STIP. I'm curious, the Municipal Planning Authority boundary was meant to be updated or is slated for updating, and that would impact what projects are actually eligible for inclusion within the boundaries of the MPO. Is it your understanding that the bridge replacement projects were within the MPO's boundary when they were added to the STIP?
Yes, that is my opinion. The Steese Highway Milepost 5 is fully within our current boundary, and the flood control bridges, if you look at the project limits of that, it stretches partway into our boundary. And if any part of a project is within our boundary, it needs to be in our local plans. So it's not majority in or minority out. There will be construction work based on what I've seen of the plan sets that's likely going to go into our boundary. So it really should be in our local transportation plans per the regulations.
And as a follow-up, the local area boundaries are part of the federal regulation. Is that correct?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, next slide. Other concerns that we had, looking at this document from kind of a financial analysis perspective, looking at the STIP as a whole and the totals of the amount of funding dedicated to projects statewide, it was relatively clear to us that the STIP was overprogrammed with too many projects, and fiscal constraint was not demonstrated as required by the regulation. And so just to kind of share with you like what we were looking at, when you total up all the projects in the STIP, it was about a $6 billion investment. But what we know from the federal highway apportionments to the state only has about $3 to $4 billion available within that four-year time frame. And when I say fiscal constraint, another way to say that is that your spending on these projects throughout the state cannot exceed your expected revenues. And it did appear that the spending in the STIP was exceeding the expected revenues to the state. Also, there was a large balance of what's called advanced construction funds included in the STIP, about to the tune of about $900 million in projects. And this is where you're borrowing federal money from future years to pay for current year projects. Not only did we think that that was kind of a high balance to rack up, because you're basically racking up a credit card there, at some point you're going to have to pay that back, but the STIP didn't show what years that funding would be paid back. So as an example, if you have $700 million this year, but you've got $1 billion in projects, you could borrow $300 million from next year in 2026 to pay for this year's construction program. But then next year, the expectation is that you reduce your program by $300 million to pay that back. So, but none of the payback of the $900 million that was shown being borrowed was identified in the STIP. Also, there was new programs that were added to the STIP. There's a list there on the screen. I don't need to go over all of them, though. But these are new programs that we had not heard of before or were included in the state's long-range transportation plan. And there was quite a bit of funding dedicated to these programs, but there were no projects identified, nor any details on whether or not there might be a community nomination process to access funds out of those programs. And then there was a number of projects that we found that were programmed with certain types of federal funding, because there's many different types of funding as part of that federal highway apportionment to the state. But there was project being programmed with funding that wasn't eligible for that use. So an example would be, there's quite a few examples, but one example would be is that there was a LED streetlight conversion project that was included in the STIP, and they were using congestion mitigation and air quality funds for those streetlight conversions, but that's not an eligible use of that funding. That funding category needs to be a transportation project that reduces motor vehicle emissions. So, but that project really only saved the state money on their power bill. So again, it wasn't an eligible use of that funding. And there was a number of examples identified by our federal partners during their review of that. And then lastly, the funding tables in the STIP, we found them to be not consistent with each other. And then there were some inherent calculation errors. There were some formula errors in those tables. And so we didn't have accurate totals. And when tables don't match up with each other, we don't know what the correct funding amount is that dedicated to projects.
Mr. Fox, we have a question from Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Fox, going back to your first bullet on this slide, the fiscal constraint, and based on what you said, I just want to clarify clarification on that. You know, you essentially, as I understood you to say, the spending plan did not meet the revenue. So is that just it almost kind of seems like a basic math budgeting type thing? Like, it's basic. Is that my understanding of that concept of fiscal constraint?
Yes, that is correct, and it is part of the regulations that with the STIP and our TIPS for that matter, that the document must demonstrate fiscal constraints. So you have to have tables that show that your spending is not exceeding revenues, and those fiscal constraint tables were not there.
Follow up.
Through
the chair, Mr. Fox. So, you know, I guess my question is if that's like a basic statutory requirement, how does that happen? I mean, maybe you didn't do it, but how does that happen? Do you have any plausible explanations?
I have some guesses, but I don't think that I want to speculate on that in this meeting, if that's all right.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay, next slide. And this is my last slide on here and some of the early concerns that we pointed out in our comment letters on the STIP back in August and September of 2023. The last one was plan alignment. We've been following in the Fairbanks area, because we are somewhat of a freight hub, the use of National Highway Freight Program funding. And we were part of the stakeholder group that helped the state develop their freight investment plan for use of their National Highway Freight Program funds. So the state had, at the conclusion of that stakeholder process, the state had adopted their freight investment plan in January of 2023, at which earmarked those funds for some relatively large projects up on the Dalton Highway and then down on the Sterling Highway in the Kenai Peninsula. But when the STIP was released just 6 months after this document was approved, those funds got switched over to other projects in the STIP, and some of those were the bridge replacement projects in our area. And that's not an eligible use of that funding. The regulation requires that use of this National Highway Freight Program funding be used on the freight investment plan that the state adopts. But that was not shown in the STIP. And then continuing on with plan alignment here, part of the regulation is that the STIP is supposed to link its investments and projects to the state's adopted performance measures. And performance measures are things like pavement and bridge condition, travel time reliability, air quality, et cetera. There's a whole list of performance measures that the state has to adopt either in an annual or biannual basis. And those investments need to be linked to those performance measures that the state has adopted. However, in the STIP, in the narrative section in the beginning, the commissioner's office had a new vision for strategic investment areas, and the investments that were made in the STIP were linked to those strategic investment areas as opposed to the performance measures as required by regulation. And now there's a little bit of overlap between those two. The categories are somewhat similar between the commissioner's office strategic investment areas and performance measures, but again, the STIP needs to link those investments in coordination directly with their performance measures and not be using other things there. So that was a concern to us, that the investment being made in the STIP might not be compliant with the regulations. Okay, next slide. So again, as I mentioned, the draft STIP was released for public review in July. The end of that comment period, I believe, was September 3rd, 2023, and the STIP was about to expire on September 30th, just, 3 to 4 weeks later. Based on, what we saw and what we submitted for comments and based on what we heard from our federal partners, again, this is the Federal Highway Administration, the Federal Transit Administration, the STIP was likely not approvable, and they asked DOT to request a six-month extension. And there is opportunity in the regulations for extensions, but it is a one-time extension. And interestingly, in part of the regulation, to grant DOT an extension on this timeline, it does require the concurrence of the MPOs. And of course, we speedily put together letters and offered our support for that six-month extension because, again, if the STIP expires, that means our TIPs expire too because they're part of the STIP. So we did provide that support as shown on the screen there. Following this, within this six-month time frame, new drafts of the STIP were produced by DOT and submitted to our federal partners in November of 2023 and January of 2024. However, a lot of the deficiencies that we had identified, as shown on the previous slides, were not yet addressed in those versions. And what we observed is it appeared that, based on the findings that came out, the commissioner's office was doing a little bit more arguing with the federal partners rather than cooperating with head-on directly addressing those findings. Next slide. As a result of that January draft of the STIP that was turned into our federal partners, based on their review and the fact that these deficiencies had not yet been addressed, they issued a 26-page letter in February of 2024 stating that the STIP cannot be approved. and outlined the planning findings and corrective action items that need to be addressed as conditions of approving the STIP. A month later, DOT did turn in a new draft of the STIP. Some of those deficiencies were addressed, some were still not. And March was the end of the six-month extension, so it was critical that DOT turn in their latest version during that month. And at the end of the month in March, the federal partners issued a 30-page letter outlining the planning findings and corrective actions that had not yet been addressed and provided only a partial approval of the SCIP. Next slide. So now begins work on STIP Amendment Number 1. Our federal partners asked that the planning findings and corrective actions be addressed within STIP Amendment 1 to achieve full approval of the STIP. DOT continued work on the STIP Amendment for the next few months and did release a draft of that amendment in July of 2024. But again, some of the deficiencies were addressed, others were not. And at the conclusion of that process in September, so just a few months ago, our federal partners again issued only a partial approval for the STIP with a new 16-page letter. It's quite a few pages shorter, but there were still outstanding planning findings and corrective action items to be addressed. And in that letter, they asked that DOT have monthly meetings with those federal partners and asked DOT to develop a STIP action plan to address the planning findings and corrective action items moving forward. Next slide.
Mr. Fox, on that last STIP Amendment 1 slide, was a STIP action plan put forward?
That's my next slide.
Okay.
So yeah, with STIP Amendment Number 1, after that action plan was requested, I don't believe the monthly meetings occurred. Soon after that request for a STIP action plan, in October, DOT submitted a letter contesting nearly all the planning findings and corrective action items that were still outstanding. So I would consider this, looking at it, the letter looked more like a no action plan than actually a STIP action plan. And as you can see, a quote on the screen there from the letter where DOT had contested all 5 planning findings, 6 of the 8 corrective actions, all 10 recommendations, and 7 of the narrative statements. After this letter was sent to our federal partners, the commissioner and deputy commissioner flew to Washington, D.C. To meet with the Federal Highway Administration's headquarters and try to get these planning findings and corrective actions overturned. One of those corrective action items was overturned, and that was allowing the Chena Flood Control Project, which is on the edge of our boundary. Federal Highways allowed that to move forward in the STIP, but all other planning findings and corrective action items remain unchanged and still need to be resolved within STIP Amendment Number 2. And all of these letters that I'm referencing here in my presentation, just want to make note, they are all available on the DOT STIP website. So you can see the letters that DOT wrote and then the responses from our federal partners. So there's quite a bit of correspondence there to review in chronological order so that you can verify these actions. And then the next page, just a comment on how things went in 2024 as a result of all this. We did experience less construction work in Fairbanks and Anchorage compared to previous years. At the federal fiscal year end, I had asked DOT staff if they were going to be able to spend all of their 2024 dollars by the end of the federal fiscal year, which was September 30th. I received indications that that they were not. What I heard in the November 5th Roads and Highways Advisory Board meeting was there was about $170 million shortfall in 2024 obligations. But the good news is that hopefully that money can be, it's very possible that money can be carried forward into 2025 so that it's not lost. And we also learned from that Roads and Highways Advisory Board meeting that about $100 million was used towards payback of those advanced construction funds against DOT's current balance. So if you ever have the opportunity to listen to that recording, that is very helpful getting up to speed on where the STIP at is currently. And then, of course, through the media, we saw what happened with August redistribution. there was $71.4 million available to the state of Alaska to grab for obligation-ready projects, but based on the submittal turned in by DOT, they were only successful in grabbing 19 of that $71 million that was available to the state.
Mr. Fox, on this slide.
Yes.
What is the amount that we, as a state, might typically receive in August redistribution?
In previous years, I believe that there is a slide from the Roads and Highways Advisory Board meeting, but we've had good years where we've received $90 to $100 million in August redistribution. Other years, it's been a lesser amount, but I think it's been quite some time since we got such a low amount.
And just as a follow-up, do you know how much DOT, and we can ask this of the department at a future meeting, but is your organization aware of how much was requested by DOT for this year's August redistribution? It says $71.4 million available, but do we know what was requested?
There are links in the ADN article that shows what was requested. I believe DOT asked for the full amount.
Okay.
But there were a number of projects that were not ready to receive funds yet. So they may not, the design may not have been completed yet. They may not have all the permits in place. There was a number of projects, I believe, that weren't ready for that obligation of funds.
We have a question from Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Fox. I'm kind of looking at the second main bullet point, and you talk about $170 million shortfall on obligations. And then in the next part, you say, use the word hopefully. I assume that's aspiration on your part. But what happens to this unobligated funding, that, like, what can happen to it? Does it just disappear into the ether? Or, what, for a new legislator, just help me understand this.
Yep. No, absolutely. So I use the word hopefully because there's kind of different rules for each different fund category. Many federal funding categories has what's called a period of availability. So they might be 2024 funds, but you can use them that year, the next year, or the year after. So you do have a three-year window in which you could obligate those funds. So my hope is that the funds that were not obligated, again, can be carried forward, but that depends on the fund type. Trying to get to your second question there. Oh, if the funds cannot be carried forward, or you get through your period of availability and have not spent them yet, it's what it's called is those funds lapse. So they're taken out of your revenue stream and they're put in that bucket, I think typically with August redistribution. So they're made available to other states that can use that funding.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay, just have a couple more slides here. Next slide is STIP Amendment number 2. As I stated previously, we've heard from the Commissioner's Office that it will be released this month, meaning January. I've also heard that the preliminary draft, as requested by Federal Highways, I believe has been sent to them for review. They wanted a two-week time window to review that, so this may push the actual release date out to February, but we'll see. I don't know the date of when that was sent over to Federal Highways. On the MPO side, we were also interested in a preliminary review of the draft before it's released, but we really kind of narrowed down our request to, well, at a minimum, please give us a summary of the changes that were, in the project list, or the summary of the changes to projects that are going to be in this release. And so, and we have not received that yet. It's unclear to us at this time. I don't know what dialogue has been occurring between the Commissioner's Office and our federal partners, but it's unclear to the MPOs in the state whether or not the planning findings and corrective actions will actually be addressed in STIP Amendment number 2, as requested, because the DOT had contested them. So I don't know where that stands at this time. And next slide. The second question that Representative Carrick's office asked to me was, what's the outlook for 2025? The simple answer for Fairbanks is it's going to be a little bit messy. There's some good things, there's some bad things that I see here. But I'll start off with a positive update. It does look like the EPA is going to lift our conformity freeze for air quality for Fairbanks, which will help four large highway projects that were paused as a result of that freeze to get back on track to construction. Likely construction will occur in 26, 27, and 28 for those projects, so it won't necessarily hit us this year. But we're hoping in the coming months that we can get those projects restarted and finish the work to deliver them to construction. And looking at the current DOT bid calendar for our area, there is, again, less construction work planned this summer. Within our boundary, it's about $25 to $30 million in work, whereas historically it's been an average of $50 million. But I wouldn't necessarily put the blame of this entirely on the STIP. Also, it's part of the blame of this is the challenges that we've had with the conformity freeze on our federal funds in our area. So that has definitely impacted our construction program. And then some of the projects that are in design have slipped their construction year from 25 out to 26 or 27. And then as many communities across Alaska are facing, we are facing additional school closures this year, and we do have a very large transportation project to support a school that might be closed. And so we'll have the outcome of that early next month. And then with the new presidential executive order that was just signed on the 20th, it's possible that our project to install electric vehicle charging stations throughout the community, that funding may need to be redirected to something else because it's removing those programs from the infrastructure bill. And then lastly, something to kind of watch, the largest construction project in the state is the Cooper Landing Bypass project down on the Kenai Peninsula which was funded at $1 billion. As you can see in the latest version of the STIP, half of the funding for this project has now been pushed out to post-2027, so been pushed out to a future STIP. And we haven't seen that funding resurface in the STIP or Amendment Number 1. We'll see what happens with Amendment Number 2. But there is a good KTUU newscast that explains why that occurred, and also this was discussed at length in the November 5th Roads and Highways Advisory Board meeting if you want to learn more about the status of that project. Next slide. And this is really my last slide, so we can get to Aaron here next. Things I think that you all should watch for as some of this stuff unfolds here. I think that the House Transportation Committee should closely follow the recent presidential executive order, which eliminates the electric vehicle mandate. And you know, one of the mandates that the infrastructure bill had for us all was to build out the alternative fuel corridor between Anchorage and Fairbanks with the electric vehicle charging stations. And the state has apportioned to them $52 million in national electric vehicle infrastructure funds for that build out. So I don't know if that work is going to cease or may be able to continue forward, but that's a question that I think that we should all get to the bottom of. Those National Highway Freight Program funds I mentioned in a previous slide, I think you all should watch to see if they're fully programmed in the STIP in coordination with the state's freight investment plan. Again, those were earmarked for the Dalton Highway and Sterling Highway, and so we don't want those funds to lapse. Not all of that money has been programmed in the STIP yet. And then there's another fund category called Protect Funds. This is an apportionment to the state, $93 million total over the life of the infrastructure bill for projects that address transportation resilience to natural hazard. So this would be projects that help out with coastal erosion, flooding, et cetera. And I've not yet seen all of this funding programmed in the STIP. So, and I'm sure we do have a lot of projects statewide that would be great for use of this funding. And then again, watch to see if that $170 million that was not obligated in 2024, if that can get carried forward into 2025 and be fully obligated in addition to the 2025 funds. And then lastly, follow along to see how DOT is positioning itself to maximize the opportunity for August redistribution this year. And my last slide is just a thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'll be here if there's any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. And if you are able to stay around for the second half of the committee for questions, that would be excellent. Do we have any questions for Mr. Fox before we head to our next presentation? Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Fox. So, you know, very interesting presentation. So thank you for that. You know, the planning process, there's a lot of acronyms, STIP, TIP, you know, we could go on. But I guess, can you say one or two things about what does this mean for a person living in your metropolitan planning area up in Fairbanks? What does it mean in a practical basis, what this, some of the issues that you've described in terms of infrastructure, services, or even timeliness? So just, you know, kind of for a non-technical person, what does it mean for sure. people in Fairbanks?
I mean, really, the I guess for a community member up here in Fairbanks, you know, what we're seeing is kind of a lack of organization to get to a good implementation stage. It is less work on the street for our local contractors and suppliers, and so it definitely has a financial impact to our workforce and our families that rely on this income. You know, if we have an historical average of $50 million in construction work on roads per summer, and we're only seeing that at half of what the historical levels are, you know, some folks that might work in that industry, you know, might be leaving our community because of the lack of work to do and ability to support their families. So we want a healthy and robust construction season each season, and that's definitely impacted us here, and I believe as well as in Anchorage, and Aaron can comment to that later, but it affects our local economy, no doubt.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So thank you, Mr. Fox, for presenting to us. We're going to take a very brief at ease while we change presentations. All right, back on the record for House Transportation, and at this time we'll invite Aaron Yonganellen, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, our AMATS Director, Executive Director, and MPO Coordinator in Anchorage to also present to us. Welcome.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was close enough to my last name, so thank you for that. Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me today to give a brief overview of AMATS and the concerns we had on the 24 through 27 STIP. Next slide, please. So just brief kind of overview of AMATS for these first two slides. So we are the MPO for the Anchorage, Chugach, Eagle River, and Native Village of Occlutnet area. So as you can see from the map here, we are predominantly within the municipality of Anchorage. So we cover the Anchorage Bowl and all the way up north to the Kinnick River Bridge, where the municipality of Anchorage boundary stops. And then to the south, we do not go into the Indian, Bird, or Girdwood areas due to density. So just to give you some perspectives on us and our boundary. Next slide, please. So we are an MPO, but we are also a TMA, which is Transportation Management Area. So when MPOs are receiving or populations of 200,000 or greater, they kind of get bumped up into the next tier of MPOs, which means we have additional responsibilities. One of those I'll talk about a little bit later, but just wanted to note that AMATS is the only TMA in Alaska. There are some benefits that come with it as well. We do get direct allocations of funding versus having to compete with the other MPOs for it. One thing to note about AMATS is we are different from FAST and the MATSU MVP. AMATS staff is housed in the municipality of Anchorage as staff, but we report directly to the policy committee. Next slide, please. So regarding the 24 through 27 STIP, AMATS sent in two letters, one on the original STIP and then one on amendment number one. So that is predominantly what I'll be talking about today in my presentation. But I also wanted to note that another letter was sent, and I think Jackson mentioned this earlier, but AMATS did also send a letter of support for an extension of the STIP of the 2020 through 2023 STIP when requested by the Department of Transportation. Next slide, please. So one of the biggest issues that was brought up in our letters was coordination. So in the original STIP, we note here this comment from AMATS that there was no coordination done with the MPOs on the development of the original STIP. And coordination is really kind of the foundation of everything that we do in our process. It lays the foundation on how we interact with each other and the development of all of our documents. So it's pretty critical and key to everything we do. Some may ask, well, what does coordination look like on the STIP for the MPOs? The best way I can explain that is talk about how we develop the TIP, our funding program, and how the state is involved in that process. It's about a year and a half long process for the development of the TIP. It starts off with a general review of the TIP and how it did for those 4 years, what projects need to be carried forward that are currently under design or construction that we need to account for in the beginning. Then we do criteria development, which we invite DOT staff, and we routinely have two members of DOT staff, one in the planning department and one from the design group, participate on the criteria development. So we all sit down and develop it and, you know, get it all ready. Then we put it out for public comment. Then we do the nomination period, which also includes scoring the nominations when we receive them. DOT is also participating and attends, typically two people or more, one from planning and one from their design section. They help score and rank the projects that are nominated through our process. Then they're also involved in the development of the TIP. So when we have work sessions, we invite them to attend, both from the committees and from outside committee members, to participate in helping to build the TIP to put it out for public comment. When we get our public comments in and we respond to those comments, we reach out to the department for their assistance for any of those comments. And then they're part of the final process, final approval process, as well as the ongoing maintenance and amendment process that we have for the TIP. So it's a pretty in-depth coordination that we do with DOT staff on our TIP development. So when the original STIP came out and we were notified it's out for public comment, it kind of took the whole MPO off guard that there was no prior outreach to the MPO on the development of the STIP.
Mr. Yonganellen, and feel free to correct me on pronunciation. We have a question from Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, you know, I notice you just detailed very clearly the no coordination. So I guess I have a two-part question to relate it. What is your history or your understanding of the history of previous STIPs compared to this one? And so is this lack of coordination that you detailed, is this typical or is this just... is this something you've seen in the past? So that's it.
So I've only been the director for almost four years now. So it's limited that I can give you some info, but I can let you know I talked to the previous director about this. And this limited or lack of coordination is pretty common for AMATS. I will say this go around, one of the biggest concerns is that there was no outreach at all. In past, there had been some kind of heads up, hey, we're working on this STIP, we're developing it, give us any feedback, or we need to work with you on projects that need to go in the STIP and then go into your TIP. This time around, it was pretty radio silence until it got released for the public. So it was a little different, but not too much different.
And I also have a question, Mr. Yonganellen, and I might be jumping ahead, so feel free to let me know if it's in a later slide. My understanding is one of the corrective actions that was asked for from Federal Highways was to have MPOs assigned to lead execution of tasks related to corrective actions. So there wasn't this coordination in advance to the original STIP. Was there later coordination in relation to corrective actions?
I do have a slide later that might answer that question, but we may want to flag it and make sure I do answer it correctly. So I can make a note to make sure that we've answered you fully when we get to that point.
Sounds great. Thank you. And I see no other questions, so please continue.
Thank you. Okay, so next slide, please. Okay, so here's one of the other major concerns, were the fact that there were projects included into the STIP that were not in the MTP, the AMATS Long Range Transportation Plan, and then also the TIP. So in the original STIP, there are four projects that you can see listed here that were not included in the MTP. And this is kind of why coordination is important. because if there had been coordination, there may have been an opportunity to correct this prior to it becoming an issue. And then when you get to the amendment itself, there was additional projects added in, or additional phases of projects added in, that were not in the TIP. So we had commented as AMATS on the original STIP that there were projects not in the MTP, and then when the amendment came out, it was doubling down of that particular thing, only with the TIP this time instead of the MTP. So in the past, AMATS has worked very closely with the regional staff at DOT on these items. So getting projects into the MTP, getting projects into the TIP. Very similar to the TIP development, DOT staff is heavily involved in the development of the MTP. So coordination is key. Next slide, please. Okay, now we get into the technical errors. So technical errors are pretty serious. Typically people think of technical, oh, these are easy to correct. It really depends on what we're talking about here. Some of the comments that we had on the original STIP were pretty basic. What is the match rate? It's hard to find what that is. Why are projects listed in the Anchorage MATSU area when they're Anchorage only? Kind of basic things. One of the big ones I want to draw your attention to is the very last comment on there that's not numbered, but is just a generic comment that was made in one of our letters, where it talks about that the cost estimates do not match up with all the information throughout the document. So when you added up the totals in the tables given to you, the totals didn't match up what they showed on the document. Good example here is for this Sterling Highway project, where the total project cost estimate is showing $330 million, but when you add up the funding in the tables, it breaks down to $431 million. So there's a $100 million difference that was we couldn't find where that came from. And this is very concerning because of fiscal constraint. Which total was used in the development of the fiscal constraint? The $330 million or the $431 million? At the time, we did not have the ability to answer that, so that was why it was one of the concerns that was brought up. And these technical data errors were throughout the document. We just pulled out the ones that were kind of the most serious, or the ones that we felt needed immediate attention or had immediate questions on for the original STIP. Next slide, please.
Before we move on, Mr. Yonganellen, another yes. question from Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, so just to help me tie my thoughts together, so if there had been coordination with the MPOs, AMATS, would that have flagged this fiscal constraint issue that you just pointed out?
I believe so. I believe it would have been something that would have been caught early on in the process, prior to it going out to public review.
Thank you.
Okay, next slide, please, unless there's other questions.
No, please continue.
Thank you. Next slide. So, this is Amendment 1. Okay, so technical errors again for Amendment number 1. So we listed the errors that were in there for the original STIP. And then when Amendment number 1 came out, we found additional technical errors throughout the document. These ones were a little more serious than the original STIP as they dealt directly with AMATS and some of the allocations that comes to the MPO or our partners. So specific sub-allocations that are not in line with what we were told, or missing completely. And again, one of the biggest concerns here is this bottom comment, project cost amounts don't add up for all projects. And we give an example of what project that was having an issue. And this was throughout the document. So it brings up the concern of fiscal constraint again, depending upon which numbers are used. Next slide, please. Okay, another item, I believe Jackson touched briefly on this, so hopefully I'll go quick on this one, concern regarding the advanced construction. So Jackson kind of already explained what advanced construction is. AMATS also had a concern regarding the amount of advanced construction that was being shown. The original STIP, it was harder to find the information out. That's why the comment on the original STIP was, we can't find where the codes are, we don't know where they all are. And then Amendment 1, we were able to eventually find them, but the biggest issue is, we saw all the advanced constructs, but we never saw the conversions. And you can go to the current STIP that's out there right now and see that it is challenging to find the conversions listed in the fiscal constraint tables of the STIP. And so the question is, where are the conversions happening, or when are the conversions happening? Are they happening within the current fiscal years of the STIP, or are they happening in future years? And that leads to the question, okay, how are future years going to be handled in this regard if you have such a large amount of AC? At the time, we were saying 900 million, but it looks like that may have been adjusted as time goes on. And I don't know what the exact amount is in the current approved amendment number one. Next slide, please. Corrective actions. So there are two things here about corrective actions. The first one will be related to the STIP, and then the second one will be related to AMATS. Hopefully that'll answer the question that the chair asked earlier, and we'll see. So amendment number one brought some corrective actions. One of the comments that AMATS had is that there are a number of tier two corrective actions that needed to be addressed as part of the STIP amendment, and there was no information being provided to the MPOs on how those corrective actions were being addressed. And so the MPO at the time, AMATS, called this out to be like, can you please give us some more information on what's going on with these corrective actions? Next slide, please. AMATS had some corrective actions. So I mentioned that we are a TMA, Transportation Management Area. One of the requirements we have is that we go through a certification review. So FHWA, Federal Highway Administration, Federal Transit Administration, come in and do an overview, a pretty detailed overview of AMATS, and if we're meeting all of our federal requirements. We actually received 6 corrective actions in our certification review. Those 6 corrective actions were incorporated into the Tier 2 corrective actions for the STIP. I believe those are the ones that AMATS was supposed to take priority on to make sure that they happened and were accomplished. I'm happy to announce they were all accomplished. We did receive support from Central Region DOT staff, which we're really grateful of, to help accomplish all 6 of those corrective actions. Outside of those 6 corrective actions, no information was provided to AMATS on the rest of the corrective actions for the STIP amendment number one, outside of the letters that were sent back and forth between DOT and FHWA, FTA. Next slide, please. So AMATS provided these comments, and we received responses from DOT. So in our initial response letter from DOT, they were magnanimous in their approach and said, thank you for everything, we really appreciate it, and we'll look at helping to address these concerns where we can. Their second letter was a little bit of a different tone, and the letter didn't even start off with really going through our concerns. It instead raised new concerns on the AMATS TIP, amendment number 2, that had not been previously sent to us until that moment. AMATS had sent the TIP amendment number 2 to DOT about 3 months earlier, and we had not heard anything from them on it until this letter was sent to our policy committee chair with the concerns and corrections they would like to see in the TIP. I will flag, it's pretty unusual for a public comment process to have the responder provide additional feedback to the commenter outside of the comments that they had provided. So, for example, AMATS had provided comments on the STIP. Their response should have been just on the comments we provided on the STIP. But additional comments were actually flagged for AMATS. This is important because it's related to a corrective action that's listed in the Tier 2 list for the STIP, where FHW said, however, not all comments are provided a response, and some responses do not relate to the comments made by commenters. So this was unusual for AMATS, and we're still dealing with those comments that were provided to us by DOT. Next slide, please. Okay, outlook for resolution. So there's some positive and then there's some concern. So let's get through the positive first. First, as part of the corrective actions, DOT was tasked with working on a process document, the 3C, so the continuing, comprehensive, and cooperative process. That's really what the foundation of all the transportation planning is for federal funding. And in that document, it was supposed to outline how the state coordinates with the MPOs on STIP development and other plan developments. So process was done where AMAT staff and the other MPO staffs were sat together with DOT to kind of work on this process document. It was brought to the different committees of the MPOs, and they put this document forward and says, here's how we're going to cooperate moving forward. So that's a positive. However, we are still waiting for the final version of that document from DOT. We only have a draft version from September of 2024. Another positive thing moving forward is peer exchange. So from this corrective action, a peer exchange has been set up between the Alaska DOT, two peers from the lower 48, one from North Dakota and one from Minnesota, and then the MPOs from Alaska, and then two peer MPOs from North Dakota and Minnesota to sit down and talk about the concerns that we've had over this process and how we can all move forward to make it better in the future. And then there's been a significant increase in regional coordination with DOT staff and the MPOs. So I want to flag that and thank DOT for their effort on that. Next slide, please. Now, there are some concerns. The first concern is continued coordination with the STIP team. So the 24 through 27 STIP team is different than past STIPs, so we want to note that. We understand that there is often different approach of things, and we want to recognize that it's a challenge to make sure everything is captured appropriately. However, while we have the 3C process document in place, I will note I only recently found out that STIP Amendment Number 2 was going to be released here shortly. There's been no formal communication with AMATS that I am aware of letting us know that it's going to be coming out soon, and to be aware of that and to get ready to provide comments. So we may need some more work on this effort. Another concern, AMATS is perceived as a hindrance to the process instead of a benefit. You know, the AMATS process is really beneficial because we bring the local perspective to the whole process. We're able to outreach to local groups to get them involved in the process and to bring them into and get their comments brought forward. And so we want to work with everybody, and we want to make sure that we are not continued to be seen as a hindrance. And then lastly, corrective actions for the STIP. We are not sure what is happening. No communication has been given to us regarding that. So, hopefully that can change as we move forward. And then last slide is just thank you very much for your time.
And thank you very much for presenting. I'm looking to see if there are any questions from committee members. Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, on your last slide, before your thank you slide, I had a couple questions on the top two bullets. The first one is, you said that the 2024-27 STIP team is different than past STIPs. What do you mean by that? How is it different? In what ways?
In the past, it was Planning and Program Development who is managing the STIP, and so we would interact with them. In this go-round, it's the Commissioner's Office. I believe Jackson touched on this in his presentation.
Thank you. And then the second question was...
Follow-up,
yes. Thank you. You said that AMATS is perceived as a hindrance to the process. What kind of data points are you using to make that assertion?
Yes, we have gotten comments from DOT at our meetings about the fact that it takes an amount of time to get through our TIP process, to put it out for public comment, to go to the local assembly, and that amount of time can really impact and hinder the STIP process, and that there are significant concerns regarding that. And I was just trying to address that. I would recommend we not look at it as a hindrance, but as a benefit.
Thank you.
And I also have a question, Mr. Yonganellen, couple actually, on concerns moving forward. And I think Mr. Fox had a slide similar to this as well. I don't see listed sort of potential federal ramifications for not completing the STIP and getting those amendments approved. So I'm curious on one particular effect. It's my understanding that we have a sort of unique federal match arrangement. Could you comment on what is our federal match rate compared to other states? And is this something that you believe, or Mr. Fox can answer this, might be potentially in jeopardy by not having this process move forward in a timely fashion?
Yes. So our match rate is, it varies depending upon the type of funding source that you're using. Typically, it's 90.97% federal, 9.03% non-federal. There are variables. I think like the National Highway System has a different match rate depending upon the project. The Department of Transportation would have to answer the question for all the different match rates that are out there. And I don't know if it's in jeopardy. All I know is that it is up to FHWA if that match rate stays at that 9.03%.
Thank you. And if possible, Mr. Fox, if you're still on, if you could maybe also answer that question.
Yeah, for that special 9.03% rate, I don't know the exact year when the state of Alaska got that. It may go back to Senator Stevens' days. But I have been made aware of an example of where a state DOT and their federal partners weren't quite aligned on things, as kind of what we're seeing here, and that would be in Idaho. And that, you know, one of the tools that was used was to remove that special rate and raise it up to 20% match required for the state. So, and I don't know if that's necessarily being contemplated in this situation. I just know that the, you know, our federal partners have different tools at their disposal to choose from. But if we lost the 9.03% match rate and it went up to 20%, that would require the legislature to double the state match commitment for projects statewide.
So as a follow-up, Mr. Fox, just sort of in plain language terms, many projects across Alaska, if that were to happen, would become much more expensive.
They would become, they would cost the same, but it would be more expensive to the state to participate mm-hmm. in them. So, and I don't know if that's something that our federal partners are considering. It's just, I think I said throughout my presentation, I get nervous at times. And this is one thing that I'm personally nervous about. I don't know what will happen. And I don't even know if this is being considered, but it's a possibility.
Thank you. Co-Chair Eichheit has another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, my apologies for so many questions. A teacher is a lifelong learner, so that's what I'm doing. So for both of our speakers, as I've listened to your presentation, I keep trying to come around, like, what's caused these issues? And I really love the simple explanation sometimes. You know, what are the main explanatory levers or factors that kind of resulted in some of these issues? And, you know, like I had one, is it timeline? It didn't sound like that from the first presentation. Is it process? Is it expertise? Is there something I'm not thinking of? Is there, if each one of you would share your opinion based on your experience, what is the one factor that's most critical in what we've seen here?
I guess I can go first. This is Jackson with Fast Planning. I mean, the individuals that are managing the STIP have changed, moving from DOT staff into the commissioner's office. So, and I have observed a bit of a lack of understanding of the regulations and the transportation planning process. That helps.
And from my perspective, I think it's entwined with that, it's also a disagreement with the process, that it doesn't align with their understanding of how it should be.
Thank you.
I have another question for perhaps both of our presenters and perhaps neither. I wanted to note that another of the areas on the STIP that was needing amendment was communication improvements with tribal entities, and including tribal entities in many projects were excluded and subject to amendment for that reason. And perhaps neither Mr. Yonganella nor Mr. Fox has a comment on this, but has that communication improved at all from anything you've heard or seen at this point? Just another area of the STIP that we haven't discussed today.
This is Jackson again with Fast Planning. Between the original STIP and Amendment Number 1, I did observe more outreach to tribal entities throughout the state. Now, the regulation states that the state DOT needs to carry out tribal consultations. So sharing emails or posting things to websites may or may not meet the test for an actual tribal consultation. But I believe we have over 200 tribal entities throughout the state. So it's a pretty tall order to meet. But I did see some improvement between the STIP and Amendment 1 in trying to reach out to those entities.
And this is Aaron from AMATS. I have not been kept in the loop on that, so I cannot comment. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Fox, for that answer. Scanning the room one more time for questions from committee members. And seeing none, thank you again to our presenters, Mr. Fox with Fast Planning and Aaron Yonganellen with our Anchorage Municipal AMATS. I'll have to work on that acronym. If committee members are desiring to ask questions of the department after that presentation, fear not. Our next House Transportation Committee will be on Tuesday, January 28th at 1:30 p.m. in here in room 124. Please note our time change from our regular meeting time, as we are accommodating the Department of Transportation Subcommittee, which will be meeting from 12:30 to 1:30 next Tuesday. And at that meeting, we will be hearing from the Department of Transportation and offering an opportunity to get some questions that may have been generated today or others answered. And with no further business to come before the committee, our House Transportation Committee is adjourned at 2:37 p.m.